Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we will talk with Ann Gentry, the owner of one of the country's premier organic vegan restaurants, Real Food Daily, in Los Angeles. Her restaurants are frequented by many of the top Hollywood stars. A cookbook author and pioneer in the world of vegan cuisine, Ann Gentry is the executive chef to Vegetarian Times magazine. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest research and news affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, here's an interesting study that says that vegetarian diets improve mood and reduce stress, according to a study published in Nutrition Journal. Researchers asked 39 meat eaters to begin one of three different types of diets, a vegetarian diet, a meat-based diet, or a meat and fish-based diet. They found that after just 2 weeks, vegetarians scored significantly better on standardized mood and stress tests. The mood tests measured depression, anxiety, and stress. And the study showed that vegetarians actually consume less eicosapentaenoic acid, or what we call EPA, and docosahexaenoic acid, DHA, animal sources of omega-3 fatty acids, and less arachidonic acid, an animal source of omega-6 fatty acids. Here's another study that shows that meat intake is linked to kidney cancer. The risk of kidney cancer appears to be increased by eating red meat and grilled and pan-fried foods. The authors of the new study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition tracked approximately 500,000 men and women in the NIH-AARP Diet and Health Study. Those who ate the most meat, around 4.5 ounces of red meat per day, that's about the size of an average hamburger, had a higher risk of kidney cancer. Well, here's a study that shows that whole grains reduce the risk of colorectal cancer, according to a study in the British Medical Journal. People who eat 3 servings of whole grains each day could decrease their risk by 17%. 1 serving of whole grain corresponds to 1 slice of whole grain bread, 1/2 cup of oatmeal, or 1/2 cup of brown rice. Whole grains contain fiber that moves intestinal contents along more quickly and dilutes carcinogens and fosters good bacteria that protect digestive tract health. We'll be back with more right after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
And our question for today is that I have heard that lack of sleep is connected with obesity. Is that true? Well, you know, lack of sleep does appear to be associated with obesity, and one theory is that sleep deprivation disrupts the production of hormones that regulate appetite. But findings from a door-to-door government survey of 87,000 U.S. adults from 2004 through 2006 suggests that those who get the least sleep are more likely to put their health at risk by smoking cigarettes, drinking too much alcohol, and not being physically active. Well, adequate sleep is a key to a healthy lifestyle, and accumulating research suggests that it even plays an even larger role in health than we once thought. If you're not getting 7 to 8 hours sleep per night based on what we now know, it might benefit your weight and your overall health to strive to get more sleep.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
And our special guest today is Ann Gentry. Ann Gentry is a pioneer in the world of vegan cuisine. She owns one of the country's premier organic vegan food establishments called the Real Food Daily, which is located in Los Angeles, California, and a real popular restaurant for many of Hollywood's health-conscious stars. She is the author of the Real Food Daily Cookbook and also the cookbook which I hold in my hand called Vegan Family Meals, Real Food for Everyone, her latest cookbook. And she is also the executive chef of Vegetarian Times magazine. Well, welcome, Anne.
Well, thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being on Health and Longevity today. And you are a restaurant here and established a great restaurant. I've had the privilege of actually eating there several times. It seems like every time I go in there, particularly the one, you have three locations. By the time this airs, you're going to have a third one opening. Tell us what the locations of your restaurant.
The first location opened, believe it or not, almost 2 decades ago.
Okay.
In Santa Monica, right there in downtown Santa Monica, California.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're over where West Hollywood, Beverly Hills, and Los Angeles all converge on La Cienega Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And we are opening in mid-May out in Pasadena. Fabulous community out there. Feels very much like Santa Monica. Great small town feel. And they are open to us. There just was so much, you know, energy and love and attention is coming our way from that community. It's very exciting.
Well, that is. And by the time this program airs, your newest location in Pasadena will be opening up probably that week. And I have to say, every time I've gone to your Hollywood area restaurant, it seems like every time I go in there, I see some famous movie star there eating.
I knew you were going to say that. Well, look, you know, we're here in the middle of Hollywood, Los Angeles, California, you know, capital of the movie-making business, at least on the West Coast. And so, yes,
right.
I mean, you know, movers and shakers that are, in, you know, on the screen or rock and rollers or models, they've got to look great. They want to feel good and look great. So, of course, they're eating at Real Food Daily like the rest of us.
That's right. And tell us really about how Real Food Daily came about. What made you decide to open a vegan restaurant in Los Angeles back in the 1990s?
Well, you know, I'm a gal from the South. I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee on a standard American diet, Southern style. I got into natural foods living in my 20s in New York City. By the time I got out to Los Angeles, I thought, coming out here, that this would be the mecca of natural foods, that I would find a restaurant in every hood,
right,
just like, you know, Manhattan had offered me. And to my disappointment and my surprise, you know, Los Angeles was not the mecca that I thought it would be. There were very, very few places to eat. And so a series of events happened in my life. At that time, I was a good cook, a good home cook. And I saw a void. I saw a need, and I jumped on it. And here I am almost 2 decades later.
Well, you definitely filled that need, because I remember years ago when I became a vegetarian back in the 70s, I think there's just one restaurant in Hollywood. And I lived in Orange County. I had to drive all the way down there to go to it.
Yes.
Yeah, on Sunset Boulevard, I remember. And now you've got these three locations. What do you really attribute your long-term success to at Real Food Daily?
Well, I think it's about the food that we're serving, an exclusive vegan cuisine with a commitment to organic produce and products. So it's not just our produce, but it's our grains and beans and flours. And most 90% of what we're doing has been grown certified organically. And it's the quality of the food, you know, the way we put it together. I think that we've really shown the mass public, the general public of people that are going out to eat, most people eating at Real Food Daily, they're not vegan, they're not vegetarian. They may be at some point in their life, and then again, they may never be, but they're seeking out quality food in a quality environment, and we've, you know, really put vegan food. We've been a forerunner and a real trailblazer to show people that vegan food can be really exciting and tasty and satisfying. And it's not gruel. It's not something that you feel like you're being punished for.
Right.
It's really a celebration with color and texture and flavor. And Real Food Daily has been doing that now for a long time. And I think that's what people keep coming back for.
Well, you really prove that, and I really enjoy eating at your restaurants. And I know when you started out back several years ago, it might have been a little challenging to find some of those certain vegan or vegetarian ingredients for your chefs to prepare these foods. Tell us a little bit about that, and what have you found as some of your favorite sources of those foods today?
Well, believe it or not, I mean, you know, you go all the way back to the 60s when this so-called movement started.
Right.
And they're, you know, some of those original companies, the Erewhon, Osawa, White Wave, those companies are still in business. They may have been bought up. The name may have slightly changed. But the natural foods business has been going for a long time. And certainly in the past, in the time I've been in business and in the last 10 years, you see it continuing to grow. You know, sparks of an explosion here and there, depending on trends that are happening. Stores like Whole Food Market, Milo Co-Opportunity here in Santa Monica. I mean, these stores are doing very big business. And again, just like Real Food Daily, reaching out to the masses, it's not just a particular type of eater that is shopping in those stores and using these products. So really, we're buying the same things that, you know, people are buying on the shelf when they go to these natural food stores.
Now, you've been a real outspoken person for an advocate for the organic farmers, which I really appreciate. Tell us about purchasing organic produce and some of the ways that the listeners and people who are interested in healthful living can really support organic agriculture.
Well, I think one of the things that people need to really become educated about as a consumer is that we really need to understand this farm bill that's going to go through Congress, is in the process of going through Congress now, called the Farm Bill of 2012.
Yes.
You can Google it. There's all kinds of information out there at our fingertips. And I think that if we don't pay attention to this, and if we don't actively engage our representatives and Congress, you know, it's going to be passed unnoticed, and we're not going to be happy about what gets passed. There's a lot of intricate details to it that I'm not an expert to speak about it, but I know that we've got to become more vocal about it, and people have to really wake up. Otherwise, they are going to wonder what's happened to the food that we eat, how our food's being grown, and how this food is getting to us. I think another arena is also getting educated about GMOs, genetically modified organisms.
This
is a very real issue. And we have to stop passively buying into the belief that GMOs have always been in our food chain, which is what people want us to believe. And I don't think we've seen the health repercussions yet show up, but sooner or later they're going to show up. And, you know, there are a lot of lobbyists out there, you know, lobbying for GMOs. And just like Europe, we need to wake up as Europe. They're way ahead of us. You know, they do not allow it in their food sources, and we need to be doing the same thing in this country. One of the things that people can do is look for the non-GMO project label on food products. The great thing about that, that's a labeling that's on all kinds of things that are non-GMO, even things that you wouldn't think, you know, that they would have that sticker on. And again, it's just awareness and education for people to start to understand what that really means.
Well, that's an important thing, because I know the non-GMO project actually sets the highest standards for testing and evaluation certification for non-GMO products, because sometimes you'll see, because it's popular these days, you'll see products that say non-GMO, but in actuality, they may not be.
That's right. And that's why that the non-GMO, you know, project label is really important, because those people have really done the work. They have you can go on their website, and they're, you know, I'm sure there's thousands now of products that they have their label on.
Yes. Now, let's talk about the vegan diet, and for you personally, I know it's very important, but let's talk about some reasons that you feel it is important for people to move towards going to a vegan diet?
You know, I think that people are on a food journey. That's what I like to call it. People that get conscious about what it is that we eat. And so it is a journey, and it's ever-changing, and what you need in certain times in your life may not be what you need at this time in your life. I've certainly seen that in my journey that I've been on now for about, you know, close to 30 years. You know, when I first changed my diet to a plant-based cuisine, I was finally able to get a handle on managing what I thought was going to be absolutely impossible, which was my uncontrollable sweet tooth. Because, you know, I grew up in the South eating the standard American diet with lots of simple carbohydrates, which meant basically baked goods and sweets.
Yes.
And so, to me, just getting conscious about what I ate. And in the beginning, I wasn't a vegan. It was just slowly eliminating things. And, you know, some people can jump in and just do it overnight. They read a book and it changes their life and they go for it. They become vegan. For me, it's been a gradual process. And I think that that's true for a lot of people. And so you make these changes and you start to feel better, look better. For me, I was definitely driven by health reasons, you know, almost 30 years ago. Not that I was sick, but it just made sense. And because I started to feel better. So, you know, I was getting the results that I wanted, which was definitely feeling better. And I didn't want the, you know, chemicals and hormones that are pumped into animals to come into my body. And I feel the same way about raising kids as well. You want to keep it as clean as possible. And I also have come to, you know, certainly not like the idea of how animals are so inhumanely treated. And I think that's a real commentary to, you really, in a way, how we treat each other. You know, it's all interwoven in terms of how we're living, you know, on this planet, and we're living, you know, with one another. So for me, it's after years of eating this way, I certainly realized that eating primarily a vegan diet, you know, I'm a vegetarian at this point in my life. I will explore and have things that have a little bit of dairy into them. My children are vegetarian, and that's what's working for me now. That may change again. I may become a hardcore vegan. Or I started out learning the principles of macrobiotics. That's what really got me into cooking.
I see.
But, you know, all of these support, you know, my personal health and my personal ethics. And it is about, you know, as what I learned in macrobiotics, it's supporting a one peaceful world where we're doing very little harm to our environment, to animals, to each other. And, you know, in the long run, I think that most people really do want that. They're just finding their way into that.
Now, you've really helped people to do that through your cookbooks. You have two cookbooks. You have the Real Food Daily cookbook and the one that I'm holding in my hand, this beautiful cookbook, The Vegan Family Meals, Real Food for Everyone. Let's talk about your cookbooks. I don't know which one you want to talk about first or both of them. Maybe a little bit about the differences between the two cookbooks.
The first cookbook, the Real Food Daily cookbook, is definitely the restaurant cookbook. It has a lot of our items that we serve in the restaurant, so you can take those recipes and do them at home. And the second book was more of a personal book. It was definitely a gift to my family. It was really came out of cooking for, you know, my own family. And your family can, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to have kids. You know, your family is whoever you're cooking for. And sometimes that's just you. It's for single people, too, who are cooking for themselves because food is very important to them. Neighbors, coworkers, whoever you're inviting to sit around your table. And one of the things that I've really learned in these past couple of years of cooking for my family, my extended family, is that, you know, I started to look at, while it's nice to have the American style, 4 to 5 dishes at every meal. I mean, that's certainly how I grew up, you know, and certainly the main part of the meal was, you know, a big animal protein and then a little bit of, you know, overcooked vegetables on the side. I think we really evolved and it's changed, and it's not so necessary to have to feel as a home cook that you've got the pressure to come up with all of those dishes at every meal. And I find that, you know, and of course what people worry about is the nutritional component, but if you are making a couple of dishes for every meal, and
right,
it may not be this so-called complete meal the way your mom made.
Right.
You know, you will balance your nutrition intake across the day, across the week. I mean, again, you just don't have to get hung up on making every meal a feast. And I've learned to stick, certainly cooking at home, definitely a plant-based diet, because it's so much easier to cook. And that's where I bring in my whole grains, all kinds of vegetables, which are really relatively simple to prepare, and they're always accessible, and they're economical. And I, you know, on at nights, you know, after working all day and being in the food business all day, 2-3 recipes at a meal, and that keeps people at my house, at my table, I mean, they're very satisfied.
Well, let's talk about some of the recipes. Give us some examples of some of the different recipes and categories of foods that you have in here, because you have some wonderful alternatives to the typical American, sad American diet, healthier recipes here. Let's go over some of them.
Sure. Well, you know, one of my breakfast is the first chapter, of course.
Okay.
How perfect. And, I think that we're living in a world where, I mean, but some of my best friends do not eat breakfast, you know, or breakfast is, you know, a coffee drink with a lot of whipped cream on top.
And a donut to go with it, right?
And again, back to what I learned from macrobiotics and Chinese medicine, you really want to jumpstart your energy. And you've got to do that by getting those digestive juices going. And you do that by eating something, not by drinking coffee.
That's right.
And so this is a great chapter, from granola to various different, you know, whole grain dishes, oatmeal, quinoa cooked in the morning, to smoothies for people that, you know, live in a more hot climate, that can take, you know, starting the day with a fresh fruit smoothie, from to tofu scrambles, to tempeh bacon, potato dishes, and of course some great baked goods. And then I take it right, this cookbook, Vegan Family Meals, into snacks and sandwiches. And I really looked at that chapter because most people tend to think of a snack nowadays is that's going to be something sweet.
Right.
Certainly as a mother of young kids, you know, every sporting event, every after school event, it is amazing. When I was growing up, getting pizza was a real treat that you only got sometimes. Pizza is at every baseball game, every sporting event. My daughter's running track and field, and the food that they have in the middle of the track and field run is unbelievable to me. And we wonder why our young children are, you know, obese and getting fatter. And it's certainly not just in low-income, you know, neighborhoods. It's just amazing. It just blows my mind all the time that people don't seem to get it. Food is everywhere. And this food is just junky, white flour, fatty,
right,
sugary food. So my snack chapter is about savory snacks and how can you really turn your, you know, your mindset into realizing a snack does not always have to be sweet.
Well, give us some examples of those snacks.
Hummus. I mean, that's a pretty typical one.
Very good.
Let's see. Roasted nuts, roasted seeds, little mini sandwiches, mini wraps, rice wraps, vegetable wraps, baked kale chips.
Yeah, so instead of potato chips, I see kale chips. Tell us about that one.
And, you know, everybody out there, listen to this. They're so inexpensive to make. Kale is usually like $1, $1.29 a head. I mean, I'm so incensed, and I get it, I understand, but, when you buy the pre-made kale chips, they can be close to $10 a bag. I mean, don't put me on. You can make them yourself. It is so easy. You don't need a dehydrator. You can do them right in your oven. And kids do love this. They're crunchy, they're a little bit salty, and they totally hit the spot. An eggless tofu salad and a pita, believe it or not, I get my kids to eat that. And also, these are also recipes that also can be incorporated into also very simple meals, which would be my next chapter. And my simple meals certainly do have a plant protein, the form of beans and legumes or all the soy products. And how can you make those simply? How can you make enough of that to possibly have for lunch or a meal a couple of days later? I will explain that all in my book. Salads, the same thing. Of course, as a woman, I love my salads, but I love to put a salad together where you really are having a whole meal.
Yes.
So it's not just the salad greens, but it's loaded with vegetables,
right,
sometimes plant proteins, nuts, seeds, beans, legumes, and you've got a whole meal in a salad. Totally satisfying.
When people, sometimes they hear the word vegan, they get a little scared of that type of thing, and you're going to invite people over to your dinner at home. Let's say someone's going to take your cookbook and invite them over home. What are some suggestions you can make? Because I think this is a great opportunity to win people over to this way of eating.
You know, preparing and cooking plant-based meals, one thing that I like to share with people, it really does encourage creativity in the kitchen. And that's what I think can get people excited. That, again, as I mentioned earlier, it's not gruel, it's not boring, it's not about depriving yourself. It's really about celebrating whole grains and vegetables, foods that have life. They come from the ground. And you can fill your pantry throughout both of my books. I have a pantry really educating people what some of these unusual and different plant-based foods are. And you can fill your kitchen up with that. And you demystify, you know, these unusual ingredients by trying them and exploring them and working with them. And then they'll just become a part of your pantry. And I think that that's how people can see that this is a very powerful cuisine and can stand on its own right next to Italian or French or, you know,
yes,
Pan-Asian, Japanese, whatever. This is just another style of cooking. And I think many people are really embracing it. They want more vegan and vegetarian meals. They want to make them. And they're seeing, oh, this is just another thing that I can be doing. It doesn't have to be the be-all or the end-all.
Well, thank you so much for offering those great restaurants so people can enjoy when dining out, and this cookbook, Vegan Family Meals, Real Food for Everyone, that you can make these wonderful meals in your own home. And let me ask you, now, how does one get a hold of your cookbooks?
Yes, they're definitely available in national bookstores, on Amazon.com, and,
okay,
and BarnesandNoble.com, and you can go to my website, realfood.com, and, you know, I'll point you in those directions, or you could order the book right off our site as well. And also, of course, in my restaurants.
And we'll make it available on our website, too, healthandlongevityradio.com.
That'd be great.
So thank you very much, Ann, for being with us today, and continued success as you spread the message through your restaurant and through your cookbooks about healthy eating.
Thank you so much, John. It's been a pleasure and a lot of fun talking to you.
And you too. Thank you.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's all for this week. Until our next broadcast, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.